they kill. They don't want Assata to do any time. They don't want Assata dead. This government does. This country does. But with Lori Berenson, appearance of middle class, upper middle, so I think the Bush administration will eventually cut some kind of deal with the Peruvian government, give them some money or give them some trade considerations and something, and greatly diminish the time. That's what I'm trying to say. So and you only do that because you're white and appearance are rich. That's what's probably going to happen.
Thank you for calling.
Race plays a big deal in everything. You know that.
Okay.
Just about, and about Archie Bunker. I heard you earlier saying something about people needed that exposure, or implying that people needed that exposure.
No, I didn't say they needed that exposure.
Nothing funny about.
I didn't say anything about it. I didn't say anything about it being funny.
I misunderstood you then, Clay.
No, I'd never used the term funny in that exchange.
No. I'm saying nothing funny about it. When you were talking to your friend James.
Yeah.
Earlier this morning, you seen the both of you seem to be saying that everybody needs to be exposed to everything,
and we need that kind of racist exposure because this
country is racist, sexist, and homophobic. And you know that.
Brother man, what we are saying is the moment you start interfering with the artist's right to portray characters, who is that going to fall on most heavily? Who do you think is going to bear that weight? The minute you put into motion the notion that you can suppress artists and their artistry, who's going to pay the cost for that?
No, I understand what you're saying, dude.
That's all I'm saying. If you don't want to watch Archie Bunker, don't watch it.
My kids were not allowed to watch it when he was on.
Very good. Let me move on. Thank you for calling.
Okay.
BAI, you're on the air. Hello.
Yes, Clayton.
Yes.
I had a point that I just wanted to get to, but holding on, I heard all the previous speakers, so I like to...
You got a radio on?
Getting
a little feedback.
Okay, is that better?
Yeah, that's better. Go ahead.
Okay, one of the comments based on your previous call was, the person that makes an accusation has the responsibility of bringing the evidence.
Mm-hmm.
That's for one of your callers. Also, in regards to one of the callers in a question about classism, one of the ways that we can deal with eliminating that is that those who have help by giving to those who don't have.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And in terms of Lori and her situation and how she's being portrayed, I think that there is some similarity with her situation and Patty Hearst, you know. So that's something that could be discussed.
Point well made.
At some other point.
I thank you.
Okay. Now, in terms of her situation in general, I don't think that the public should just look at her as an individual who was on trial. But there's a bigger picture from my point of view. And the bigger picture is our government. Our government, in terms of their involvement, in terms of trying to help her. And the reason why I say that, because our own government has hypocritical stands on issues similar to her. And to give you an example, without giving names, because I might mess up the name, in the case of the embassy bombing, one of the defendants was convicted on the basis of association.
Mm-hmm.
No evidence. Was lured to the United States so that he can be a part of this trial.
Mm-hmm.
Why do I say that? Lori, from some of our own American citizens' point of view, you know, she was only a victim of her association. When do America take the stand that you are guilty through association, when the Constitution and other laws and things rule that as what you are not supposed to be judged by?
That's a very good point, and one that I hope we are able to continue to explore in the coming weeks, because you've raised an issue, and indeed, in comparing these two trials. And again, remember, the case you're talking about is a case, again, adjudicated in this country. We don't know very much about the way the law functions in Peru, and why we may disagree with the way they have their court system operating. It's their court system.
Absolutely.
If you go there, once you cross the border, you better be in touch with how. Remember the film Midnight Express?
Yes.
Okay, well, the guy goes to Turkey. He apparently doesn't know anything about Turkish law.
Yes.
So he doesn't know that if they catch you dealing drugs, the penalties are very severe.
Yes.
His attitude is, well, I'm an American. I wouldn't be treated this way at home. Their attitude is, well, you ain't home now.
Mm-hmm. And my point also, Clayton, is that America, under the circumstances that Lori is under, say someone else is in disagreement with this government and decide to organize or protest against what America does, America treats that person equal or harsher than what is happening to Lori in another country. That's why we have the political prisoners. And America does not want to address her own problems in terms of political prisoners, you know, and that's an international issue. But when it comes up in the UN and in other international arena, America is always, you know, taking a position opposite the general international body and in terms of their laws, you know. And this is a big issue in this country and with other countries in regards to America, and I think it's going to be an issue at the international conference coming up on in South Africa.
Coming up this fall.
And I'm going to get off, but
I
would like to make the suggestion, you know, that those who can, in terms of maybe going, but definitely those who have the ability to report back to the people what happens when the issues come up in South Africa about the United States and their human rights.
Okay. Listen, right. Thank you.
Okay.
All right, 1:09 in the New York afternoon. Upcoming, Radio Free Aaron, also Gut Bucket Matinee, and Liquid Town Launch. WBAI, you're on the air.
Get this lackey off the air.
Which lackey?
You.
Oh, I thought you were the lackey, and he's taking himself off the air. That's a nice move. WBAI, you're on the air. Lackey speaking. Hello.
I'm not speaking to lackeys. I'm speaking to Clayton Riley.
Oh, okay. You got 2 minutes.
Listen, I just
2 minutes.
Called. I just called.
Okay, it's 2 minutes. You
I
got
know,
until,
love, but I'm trying to ask you publicly to either assert why you have this desire. It goes back to Dr. Mary Frances Berry.
What does?
You claimed that before I made my first call, you had gotten this piece of literature where I said that she lied. She said to us in a group meeting of 80 people at in this large room,
mm-hmm.
Regarding the employment of people at the station.
Yeah, what did she say?
She said in not 2 weeks, 3 weeks, but in a month, she would get back to us with her understanding of why the people who were working, some of whom didn't get green dollar bills or checks from Pacifica, didn't have a right to be a part of the union,
mm-hmm.
Okay,
why not, since you're mumbling that?
Well,
way,
the
let,
union
let me,
discussions
let me,
about the
hey,
station.
Let me interject, okay?
So the
fact
union,
that,
come on,
hey,
wait,
Monroe,
will
do you want
cut it out?
Do you want to talk with me or do you want to talk by yourself? Because if you
I'm
talk by yourself,
to,
you get 30
I'm,
more I, seconds. I'm saying if you want to talk to
I'm
me and with
to,
me, well
I'm
then,
trying to
well then,
so you
quiet. Hey, don't tell me you're
going
to. Hey, who the hell are you to tell me you're going to make me understand? Who
I'm
the hell do you think you are? You
I'm
don't need to
help
me, man. You don't need to help me. That's white supremacist doggerel, man.
Will you
Your
stop
assumption
it?
That you can help me?
Well, it's a very difficult thing because
say goodbye,
I would have thought
Monroe.
By now you would
say
know
goodbye.
That you would know that.
Say goodbye, Monroe. Where the hell do these people get off, man? Everybody calls and says, well, you poor downtrodden Negroes need us to help you through all of this. WBAI, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, Clayton.
Yes.
Hi. Wow. Monroe's always entertaining, even when he's obnoxious. But anyway, two quick points. And I think it was good that you heard out the fellow who was saying that he was against capitalism in its present form. You know, it's kind of like the analogous situation is that, you know, Karl Marx had to live in the world, but he was developing a different theory of how to treat people and how people should treat each other.
Right.
You know, that, and I'm glad, you know, that was resolved. But the other thing is that when you talk about capitalism, I mean, I think the main problem here is that, you know, and I've had this argument with my friend, and he says, you know, eventually with this WTO and all of this stuff going into different countries where you know, Arrow Shirt seeks out cheaper and cheaper factories as they abandon one country and go to another, you know, my friend argues that, well, you run out of countries after a while. And this is a process where, you know, people start striking, unions start developing, and you just, there's nowhere else to go that in this, you know, new internationalism that the playing field will level off. And my answer to my friend is that, yeah, in maybe 30 or 40 years, you know, at the earliest, you know, I remember a more benevolent form of capitalism on a personal level where, very quickly, where this was a distant relative of ours, or some relative of my mother's, used to go into Guatemala and purchased stuff from the indigenous people there, and she didn't pay them a lot, but she paid them what was considered a lot of money to them, and she would go down there personally, truck it up here, and then you know, and then sell it to people in her little shop. So that kind of personalized capitalism, although it wasn't always all that fair, you know, people in those days, they could have their plot of land. They were subsistence farmers. They made their crafts. They sold them to these American personalized entrepreneurs. This is very, you know, to me, you know, there will always be inequities, as you say, but, you know, that was a hell of a lot better than what we have now. This really overt exploitation, and, you know, where people are locked into factories.
I agree with you.
You know.
I agree with you. But again, let me say that we've offered this, among other people here who have offered this. The notion that until some form of socialism comes to this country, my notion of that is that there is a pragmatic form of socialism that can be asserted in the United States, building on top of the fact that we have some forms of socialism already.
Yes, we do.
Social Security being one, the GI Bill as it existed being another, subsidies to farmers, all of these things. But those issues have to become front and center. In other words, people have to understand what those programs were about, what they were intended to accomplish, so that you can build further. The intent being to see that people do not live in this country in abject poverty, because there's too much wealth here to allow that to happen. The only way you can address that or redress that evil, it seems to me, is to create the sort of government that will make it impossible for wealth to be accumulated in these small pockets and corners at the expense of the general population. When we talk about poverty, remember, we are also talking about those people who are living today in suburban Long Island and New Jersey who are two paychecks away from the welfare line.
Absolutely.
They are poor, too.
Hey, and I'm part of this.
Okay. But Pete Hamill, incidentally, no socialist, he said some years ago, he said, look, socialism will come to America in time. It won't be called that.
That's right.
It'll be called something else.
I read that, and that's because of the old Cold Warrior mentality dies very slowly, so we won't call it that. It'll be our American brand of whatever. And along those lines, I have to interject very quickly, and then I'll run, because I'm sure there's other calls. This September in New York State, they're signing up people who make a certain amount of money for medical policies, And I think two people can make, you know, they can show on the books maybe 12 grand or 13 grand or something, and one person can make about 7 or 8. But the point is, it's going to scoop up about 700,000 people in the state and give them essentially free medical insurance from the state. So very quietly, this was signed into law.
Mm.
Sign up begins in September. So we are having what everybody, what all the conservatives feared. We are going to have creeping socialism, whether they like it
wonderful.
Or not.
Wonderful. Let it creep right on.
I'm with you on that.
Thank you for calling.
Okay.
Okay, Hobby, before we take another call, let me say, we mentioned to you before this World Watch Institute, Summer Institute of Linguistics, in which we pointed out that the most commonly spoken first language in the world, that is, people who have as their first language Mandarin Chinese, number 885 million people. And the second most commonly spoken language in the world, that is, people who have as their first language, numbering 332 million, is, surprise, Spanish. Now, we live in a city where people become hysterical over the notion of bilingual education. Because they think, gee whiz, you know, people who speak Spanish are trying to take over. And before you know it, they'll be printing signs. Well, the fact is that after Mandarin Chinese, the most commonly spoken first language in the entire world is Spanish. Followed by English, okay, 322 million. Arabic, 220 million. Bengali, a number of languages. Bengali and Hindi, 182 million, Portuguese, 170 million, Russian, Japanese, and German. French not appearing there. Now, one of the more intriguing aspects of this study, 32% of the world's languages originated in Asia. Not a surprise. Edward Said has said as much in his works, and particularly in Orientalism. 30% of the world's languages, Hapti Selassie, are you listening to me? 30% of the world's languages originated in Africa. All right? And I haven't heard anybody talking. I mean, I've heard people talking a lot of stuff recently about what goes on in the world, and particularly what goes on in Africa. 30%. That means between Asia and Africa, 62% of the languages currently spoken in the world were originated in those regions, followed by the Pacific region. Only 4% of the world's languages, 4% of the world's languages originated in Europe. All right? So here we are, squeezed daily by this notion that if you're not Eurocentric to some degree, you are not in touch with the history of humankind. Well, language being the key to culture, you do not enter a culture anywhere in the world, I'm sorry, without accessing that language. One of the problems I have with people who want constantly to explore, as they should, their African origins, is the inability of people to understand in order to do that, you've got to explore African language. Languages, really, considering how many there are. Now, there are 6,800 languages spoken in the world. 30% of them originated on the continent of Africa. Now, what I'm saying to you is if people really believe that the way you understand the historical origins that are related to Africa is through the vehicle of the English language, I'm saying you're making a mistake. That's not the way to understand Africa, to say I've read 30 books on Africa, all of them in English. You know, I mean, so what I'm suggesting is maybe the British, when they gave this language, you know, sprinkled it around the world, they said, hey, when we get to America and all those black people there trying to understand Africa, we're going to give them a language. They won't even know that it is impossible for them really to understand the full thrust of their own heritage, their own history, through this language, that you have to go to the continent. You have to familiarize yourself not only with the language, but the culture generally, if you want to have that level of understanding. Let me go on just to point out that one of the countries that maintains one of the largest, slightly under 300 languages, are spoken in the Cameroon, an African nation that, and incidentally, when you then say, well, 30% of the world's languages are coming out of this region, it gives you an entirely different perspective. All of you out there screaming and hollering, what's going to happen if we have bilingualism in the schools? Well, you need to know that the second most commonly spoken first language in the whole world is Spanish. I mean, remember, that doesn't even account for people who may not have it as their first language still speak Spanish. Okay? So there's a long ride toward that. I want to mention again this book. We'll talk more about that next week. I want to mention the book Divided Minds, Intellectuals in the Civil Rights Movement. Fascinating account in tomorrow's edition of the Sunday Times book review. And what is basically spoken about is how the intellectuals and academics of that time, the 60s and early 70s, responded to the notion of what the civil rights movement was about. Not always in the way we may think. The subhead here, some intellectuals in the 1950s and 60s are found wanting in 2001, particularly in their response to James Baldwin. You wanted to add?
Oh, no, I was just going to say that, in my view, 100% of the languages spoken in the world originated in Africa.
Okay.
You know,
I'm not going to argue with that.
And I say that Mazuri is his name. I think Ali Mazuri, who wrote a book and did a television series called The Africans.
Mm-hmm. I remember the series.
Yeah, yeah. One of the things that he said that I remember quite profoundly, he said, man is native to Africa.
Hmm.
And on that basis, that if man originated there, then language began there with him also, and everything else is a derivative of.
Okay, let's add this to that fact. 8 countries in the world are responsible today
mm-hmm.
for half the languages spoken in the world, among them Nigeria and yeah. the Cameroon. Okay, so we can see that in these origins, people who have been defamed for a number of years
mm-hmm.
Have to be seen anew in terms of what has originated where and how it has moved about the world. Anyhow, yeah. Clayton Riley on time with you. We got to make room for Radio Free Aaron. As you know, and as you've been reading, and I'm sure as you will hear today, there are events occurring in Northern Ireland today, most particularly in Belfast, that require your attention. You need to pay very, very serious attention of what is going on there, because these things are not disconnected. You know, we talk about oppression, the oppressor, and the oppressed. We need to understand that these linkages, you make dots connected with lines. And the fact is, oppression has a common denominator throughout the world. So it's not perhaps enough just to read the headlines. Go deeper than that. Understand how things that are happening in Northern Ireland relate to things happening all over the world today. Moreover, we will continue to talk about this book, Divided Minds, also the new book by Robert G. O'Mealy on the jazz writings of Ralph Ellison. We'll talk to you next time. Clayton Riley on Time Review, Haptik Salasi at the controls. Stay tuned.
I don't wanna wait in vain for your love. Elizabeth McDonough.
And our dad is John McDonough.
You can hear his show, Radio Free Erin, on Saturday afternoon
from 1:30 to 3.
On this commercial-free,
listener-sponsored,
community radio,
WBAI
99.5 FM in New York.
Malachy McCourt, and this is WBAI, listener-sponsored radio in New York City.
Attention Brooklyn residents, if you or a family member have been diagnosed with HIV or AIDS and you have a problem with your government or medical benefits, housing, or need help providing for your children or other family members in the event of illness or death, Bed-Stuy Legal Services may be able to assist you. For more information, please call Bed-Stuy Legal Services on Monday or Tuesday at 718-636-1155. That's 718-636-1155 between the hours of 9:30 a.m. and 1:30 p.m. This has been a public service announcement on behalf of the Bedford-Stuyvesant Community Legal Services Corporation.
You're tuned to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM. Coming up next, Radio Free Erin.
Good afternoon and welcome to Radio Free Aaron. Well, it's been a very sad week in the Irish-American community here in New York with the death of an actor from Queens, Carol O'Connor. And during the show, we'll be paying a tribute to him and maybe taking some phone calls from our listeners to continue on from some of the other programs that have been about Carol O'Connor. We'll be speaking with George Harrison in Brooklyn, who knew the family, used to work with them on the newspaper that the O'Connor family had out in Queens, and also with the one and only Malachi McCourt. Malachi, who also knew Carol, will talk about All in the Family and Carol O'Connor's impact on the Irish-American community and the American community in general. We'll also be doing another tribute. As I said, it was a sad week in the Irish-American community with three Irish-American firefighters killed at the hardware store out in Astoria. I mean, I don't know how anyone who could not have looked at the papers yesterday. Today, I'm a bit disappointed that they moved the funeral to more to about the fourth or fifth page, but those little kids that were crying at the funeral of their fathers. And we'll be playing some music because it was in the Irish Echo that the guys used to fight in the house over in Woodside on 51st Street just off Skillman Avenue there, where they would fight over what music to play, and the music they were fighting over, and it was in the Irish Echo, was between Black 47 and Shanachie and the Chieftains, and this was an ongoing battle about what type of music. So we're going to play a little bagpipe music later on, and we'll play Shanachie, a song written by Chris Burns about being a cop, and is it all worth it? And, you know, it's from Chris's experience, and a lot of the firemen are ex-cops, that, as they call it, Bernie, they roll over. They go over from the cops. You don't really get it going the other way. You don't get firemen rolling over to the police department. You get the NYPD rolling over to the fire department. So we'll be speaking about a little bit about that during the week. We're hoping to get Nolik, and we're going to have on, I think, Teresa now in a little while to talk about something that's going on with Leonard Peltier. She's a big fan of Radio Free Aaron, and also I wanted to get back to about Carol O'Connor, is that Carol O'Connor was a fan of Radio Free Aaron. He donated thousands of dollars during the marathon for the show. And there's one regret I really do have, and there's a lot of times you go through life and you say you have a regret. We were supposed to interview Carol O'Connor when his autobiography came out, and for whatever reason, when we called up, he was on the West Coast.
He was in California.
He was in California, and we couldn't get him down to the studio here. And that is an interview that we were going to have a lot of fun with. I mean, he was born and raised in Queens. He did a lot of his acting over in Ireland, a lot of his training. And, you know, he was a major, you could say, television star here in the United States.
John, I think it was the last time that a show ever attracted an audience of 60 million people on a Sunday night. It was unreal. You know, they were trying to explain it last night. Larry King had on some of the people who had... you know, being with Norman Lear and people who had been responsible and had acted in the show with Carol O'Connor. And it was a milestone in broadcasting in America. And listen, who better for it than Carol O'Connor? Carol O'Connor, a classically trained actor and a gentleman.
Yeah, his family's still in Queens because his brother used to come into Sean Crean's Celtic Art Gallery and come around and, you know, buy some of the paintings. Probably even bought some of your stuff, Bernie.
Well, when you talk about Queens, John, you know, you had to really remember that he was born in the Bronx.
Yeah, and Bernie, I just wanted to now, we'll do that tribute, particularly for John Downey, who's from Woodside, Queens. Sean Crane and myself were at the wake on Thursday, and it's very sad and tragic to go to a wake like that, but to see how the firemen, if you could say, send you off with the honor guard, with the white gloves and the fire trucks blocking off 58th Street, and it is a sight to be seen when something like this happens and the way they treat their fallen comrades and fallen brothers.
Yeah, and John, you know, I was watching New York One and watching the other channels, and it really sad when you realize he was 5 hours away from vacation and he was heading for Ireland, him and his kids, and I was looking, a quote from Julius Caesar, by Shakespeare came back to me. I'll paraphrase it. Cowards die many times before their death. The valiant only suffer it once. And these three guys, I mean, they were doing their duty as the New York City's bravest always do. and went down in the line of duty. Yes.
And it's ironic. It just shows how many Irish-Americans are in the fire department that all three killed were Irish-Americans. John Downing himself, his parents came from Kerry. His wife's people are from Kilkeel in County Down. 17 of them flew over for the funeral, when in actual fact it should have been John that was heading over to Ireland. Instead, it was the reverse. But right now we're going to play the song that Chris Burns wrote about being a cop. Chris is a retired cop, owner of Rocky Sullivan's, and, you know, it's just about being the city worker. And then we'll play a little bagpipe music, and then there's a blessing on the back of the memorial card in loving memory of John J. Downing's January 15th of 1961 till June 17th of the year 2001. And it's an Irish blessing, which was heard here every week on Radio Free Erin as we change shows, and we'll hear that after the bagpipe. But right now, Shanaki.
Once again, we'd like to thank everybody for helping us tonight.
Yeah, you're listening to Radio Free Aaron. We're doing a tribute to the families of Brian Fahey, Harry Ford, and John Downing. Played a little bagpipe music, and the song before that was Shanachie. And I'll just read from the Irish Echo here. It said, Harry was a senior man in this company, Dowell said. He had his chair in the kitchen at the head of the table. They were great lovers of Irish music, and there was always a row over what they would listen to. The younger guys wanted Dropkick Murphy, Black 47, and Shanachie, and the older guys would be saying, put on the Chieftains. So we played a little Shanachie there for those three families. And I understand a lot of the firehouses are listening in today to Radio Free Aaron, as I was speaking to some of them at the wake in Woodside on 58th Street during the week, and we were hoping to play a tape here, a cassette, and it's just not working. Well, maybe we'll play it later on. It's not working? All right, Sandy, I'll try to work on a cassette, but you can go to the next guest.
We have with us on the phone from Brooklyn, Teresa Laino, who's with the Leonard Peltier campaign. Teresa, thanks for coming on.
Anytime. I'm just a little overwhelmed with the music you were playing for the firemen.
Yeah, well, we're sort
really of a tragedy when you see all those children, you know, left behind, and it happened on Father's Day, didn't it?
It did, yeah.
Yeah, that was terrible, and the business with Carol O'Connor is really shocking. I mean, it was, I don't know, I figured he'd be around all the time.
We did too, and we're going to be talking to Malachi McCourt later on about that.
Yeah, TV Land is doing 24 hours of Carol O'Connor.
Well,
it's a tribute.
It's a well-deserved tribute.
Yeah.
And he was a great fan of Radio Free Aaron and contributed very generously.
And he was a good activist, too.
He was a great activist.
People don't know that about him.
And we're going to be talking to George Harrison about that as well.
Excellent.
Who worked with the family. Mm-hmm. But, Teresa, you're with the Leonard Peltier campaign. And
mm-hmm.
I know you have an event coming up on Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
But before we get to that, just very, very briefly, tell us, what's happening with Leonard and what the status of the campaign is.
Well, as it turns out, he didn't get clemency from Clinton as we had expected. As we had expected. He didn't get clemency. And from what I understand, technically, his clemency papers are still pending. In other words, they haven't been thrown out. They just haven't been acted on. So what we're doing right now is we're trying to get the 6,000 pages of files that the FBI refuses to release. And since Senator Schumer here in New York has called for an investigation of the FBI, what we want to do is show him that we show support for that. We want the FBI investigated also, and we want Leonard's case to become part of that investigation. We want to know why the 6,000 files haven't been released, because we know that there's something in there that will help Leonard's case.
So, for people who don't know, what are these 6,000 pages that are being withheld from the defense?
We don't know what's in them, but we feel, they claim it's on the grounds of national security. That's a crock. There can't possibly be 6,000 pages on one man. That has anything to do with national security of the United States on one Indian man. That's ridiculous. It's absolutely absurd. I've never heard anything so stupid in my life. In fact, at one point when we questioned them and said, why can't we have them, they gave us some silly argument that Leonard didn't pay his bill. And so our attorney said, what bill are you talking about? And they said, well, he didn't pay his bill. So we said, okay, how much is the bill? We'll pay it. And they said, oh, we'll get back to you. And they never got back to us, because it's like, I don't know where they came up with this idea. This is like crazy. But we know that in those 6,000 pages, there has to be information regarding Leonard's case. Also, don't forget that the FBI withheld the ballistics report for 6 years. They withheld the ballistics report that if it was brought at trial, Leonard would be a free man today.
And Teresa, you have an action coming up on Tuesday?
Yes, we do. Tuesday, June 26th. Is the 26th anniversary of the FBI shootout at Oglala, and we're going to be picketing the FBI building at the 26th Federal Plaza on the Broadway side, and we're asking everybody to come out and show their support.
I'm Teresa.
We have a permit. If they need more information, they can call me at 718-934-5501.
And what time should people come?
Oh, 12 noon. Sorry about that. It's from 12 noon to 3 o'clock.
12 noon to 3 o'clock.
12 noon to 3.
26 Federal Plaza.
26 Federal Plaza on the Broadway side.
Okay, and just, we have to get, but before, just tell us how Leonard is holding up in prison.
All I can say is I wish that I had the strong spirit that this man has. After everything he's been through and with the great disappointment of not being released in January, he's holding up very well. But prison, you know, takes a toll on you anyway, no matter how strong you are. And I just think that we have to use him as an example of his strength, and we have to be strong, because after he was denied clemency, a lot of us just went into a funk, you know, for a couple of months. But we have to realize that he's the one in prison, and we have to be strong because he's strong. And the stronger we are, the stronger he gets, and we get his strength, too.
Okay, so that's this coming Tuesday, 12 to 3, 26 Federal Plaza on the Broadway side.
Right. I guess that's Broadway and Duane or Broadway
and
Moore.
Broadway and Duane.
Yes.
We've been there a few times.
Right, many times.
Teresa, this makes a big change from you. Instead of the FBI coming out to Brooklyn, you're coming into them.
Yeah, I know. You know, I heard there's an FBI office in Brooklyn, but they keep it a secret. It's someplace downtown. I wish I knew it. We could go there all the time. It'd be easier.
All right. Thank you, Teresa, and keep giving us updates and everything that's going on.
Hey, thank you for giving us the time.
No problem.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Take care.
As I said, we're doing a tribute today on Radio Free Aaron between Carol O'Connor and to the Fahey, Downing, and Ford family, and I wanted to play... When I was at the wake there in Woodside on Wednesday, I picked up one of the mass cards there, or the memorial cards for John J. Downing. And on the back of it, it had an Irish blessing. And I said, my God, how familiar is this? And we used to hear it every Saturday here on WBAI. So this, I'm sure, Grandpa Al has no problem sending out his best to the three families.
And... I don't know. No, we shouldn't do the old Irishman today.
Yeah?
We might do the... Yeah. Anyway, yeah. Hi, you and the mean we always did your back. May the sun never set upon your doorstep. Until we all see each other again, may the good Lord keep you in the palm of his hand. God bless you all. And have a wonderful, wonderful day. And up the rebel. Yeah. Thank you.
And that was Grandpa Al Lewis. If you want to hear him, he's doing some computer radio now on WBIX.org. I couldn't tell you what time he's on, but if you give a listen, you'll hear him every once in a while. And that was the blessing on the back of the memorial card for John Downing. And you're listening to Radio Free Aaron. And at the 2 o'clock hour, we'll be speaking to the writer, Jared O'Neill, and he has a book. Well, it's been out for a while, called Black Mass, the true story of the unholy alliance between the FBI and the Irish mob. I have to tell you...
They read from that Rockies on Wednesday night, Rocky Sullivan's, in case anyone... And it is a very powerful book. And they were talking about a young couple who had made the mistake of opening a liquor store that Whitey Bulger decided he wanted. And the husband, they got kidnapped and threatened and extorted, and the husband eventually went to prison because he was too scared to testify against Whitey Bulger. So it's an amazing story.
And we also want to tie in about the FBI using informers. Tomorrow, if you get the Sunday Times on the internet, one of our own Brian Moore's cartoons, I believe, is going to appear. A cartoon he did about Dave Rupert, an IRA.
You mean the London Sunday operative. Times?
Huh?
You mean the
London Sunday Times will be on NewsHound.
Some people think when you say the Sunday Times, you mean the New York Times.
Yeah, NewsHound, NUZHOUND. They're doing further stories on Dave Rupert. And also on Democracy Now! On Monday, Amy Goodman will be covering the story of Dave Rupert and the organizations that are banned from fundraising in this country, and that's the Irish Republican Welfare Association and the 32-County Sovereignty Committee. So make sure you give a listen on Monday to Democracy Now! On from 9 to 10. This Monday, she only put a stipulation in, Amy. She says, barring nothing happens over the weekend. So I'm hoping that Mrs. Berenson down in Peru doesn't do a jailbreak over the weekend, whereby we'll get bumped. If Lori would just hang out for another day or two. Unfortunately, that looks like the way, being that she was sentenced to 20 years there during the week. But hopefully when she gets up on appeal. Well, we're trying to get Nolik because there is a lot going on in Ireland. Nolik told me he was on a bus heading to Galway with his cell phone, but the British Army, 1,500 more troops were sent to Ireland this year. So anyone has, and this week, anyone that has any illusion about who's running that part of Ireland, the British government have sent over 1,500 more troops because of the marching season.
The other interesting thing for people who have followed the so-called peace process is the so-called pan-nationalist front seems to be unraveling. I noticed there was a lead editorial in the New York Times today calling on the IRA to disarm immediately, and Mr. Ahern and Mr. Blair are in agreement on this, along with Mr. Hume and Mr. Mallon, the leaders of the Social Democratic and Labour Party.
But that is a pan-nationalist front.
Yes, it admits somebody, though. There's this little organization called Sinn Féin, which is supposed to be part of the pan-nationalist front, and somehow they just can't persuade themselves.
All right, we're going to head to Nolik on the cell phone. Nolik, how do you feel about 1,500 more British soldiers being sent to Ireland? Hello, Nolik.
Well, I suppose there's a serious situation starting up. The thing hasn't, in fact, been cured, and agreement of recent years is slowly and now rapidly crumbling and falling apart. Two things from this part of the world this evening. I was at the 20th anniversary commemoration for the HBLAC hunger strikers this evening. Pat Doherty, the new MP, Martin Manser, advisor to the government, and Tommy Brown of the Labour Party, and it was quite amazing the things they didn't mention. We'll come to that again in a moment. The other story is, of course, that Trinidad is one of his many outings today, where there was a vote, or there was an expected challenge to his chairmanship or presidency of the party that didn't arise. Jim Molyneux, the former leader, said it's not a week for changing our leader, so he's given him a week. After that, I don't know.
Well, Nolik, do you have anything more? Because we're going to cut off and go to the author of the book, Black Mass, very
soon. I just wanted to say about the, there was an expected scenario last week about Martin Ferris making announcements that at Bordentown that there would be some destruction of arms and so on. That didn't happen. But to listen to the commentators this evening, and particularly Tommy Brown, making the point that it was the Labour Party and the SDLP that had done all the good work, that in fact the working class in his party had been worried about Northern Ireland all those years. No mention of the IRSP or indeed the INLA in there. After all, four of the 10 hunger strikers were members of those organizations and so on. It was the nearest thing I've seen to revisionism with a vengeance that I've seen in a long time. One other thing is Brinder. I believe Bran is the name of that dog he was talking about.
Nolik, thank you very much. After mentioning it to you last week, Nolik, we got a phone call from a young lady out in Queens who told us that was it. And I believe he had a second dog, too, which he gave us the name of that, too. So thank you very much for that, Nolik.
Okay,
you're listening to Radio Free Aaron. We're going to go to a little music. When we come back, we're speaking with the author of Black Mass, the true story of the unholy alliance between the FBI and the Irish mob. You might have heard about this story through 60 Minutes, but if you're up in Boston, this is front page story almost every day with the trials that are going on between the FBI and the Irish mob up there. One particular part of this story that we're going to get into is about a kid named McIntyre who was executed by the Irish mob up in Boston to cover up for an informant, Billy Bulger, on this side, and for Sean O'Callaghan on the Irish side. And that family, I believe, is now suing the FBI for letting it leak out, saying that her son was the informant. But right now, a little music. We'll come back. We'll be speaking with Jarrett O'Neill. And welcome back to Radio Free Aaron here in New York City. It's been on the New York Times bestseller list, Black Mass, the true story of an unholy alliance between the FBI and the Irish mob. Now, the FBI doesn't seem to have any problems going overseas, arresting people in Africa and the Middle East for bombings over there. But they're having a hell of a time tracking down, you could say, one of their own informants. And I don't know what the money for his capture is up to. It's about $1 or $2 million. But with us on the phone is Jared O'Neill. Jared, what currently the FBI is offering for the capture of Bulger?
Well, the latest tally is it's up to $1 million, and Whitey Bulger is now the most wanted man in America, at least in theory, second to Bin Laden. So the money's up there and the profile is up there, but he's still managed to elude capture now for 6.5 years.
Jared, I go back and forth to Boston.